Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One. Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Well, Gina's back. We'll do Eat Your Feelings with her. We get into some of the debate safety stuff, especially coming up. Dr. Drew chimes in and we talk about why the presidential debate must be done via Zoom. And Drew has very strong feelings about that as well. That's all coming. First, I'll tell you about LifeLock. Certain behaviors can make you more vulnerable to identity theft, like using the same password on every account, oversharing personal information on social media. No. It's important to understand how cybercrime and identity theft are affecting our lives. Every day, we put our info at risk on the internet. Protect yourself. You'll miss certain threats if you're just monitoring your credit alone. Good thing there's LifeLock. LifeLock detects a wide range of identity threats like your social security number for sale on the dark web. If they detect your information, they will send you an alert. Protect yourself with the industry standard. Protect yourself with a LifeLock, right, Dawson?
No one prevents all identity theft or monitor all transactions at all businesses, but you can find out if your information is on the dark web. Get your free dark web scan at LifeLock.com/scan. Pick the plan that's right for you and save up to 25% off your first year with promo code Adam. It's a free scan at LifeLock.com/scan and 25% off with promo code Adam.
For just $25, you get wine and gifts. Ace's favorite stuff or products from ACS. Every single month, you get the drink you choose. It's hard to beat cool stuff and booze. Adam's Monthly Nut. Adam's Monthly Nut.
You heard Dick. It's time for a brand new month of Adam's Monthly Nut. This month includes a download of Basic Cable Commentary Presents the award-winning Showgirls, a migraine stick, perfect for your hangovers, an ACS logo pop, stick it on your phone, set it and forget it, a keto-friendly and Vinny-approved chipmunk cookie to stave off hunger without a burrito, and of course, a bottle of your choice. The $60 value is yours for only $25. Head to CorollaDrinks.com to get 1 month or keep the shipments coming. From Corolla One Studios in Glendale, California, and brought to you by Bet Online, this is the Adam Carolla Show. Adam's guest today, World War II veteran Frank Sisson. With Bald Brian on sound effects, Gina Grad on news, and Jeff Cesario with the sports. And now, he's talking. Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get on a choice, but get on mandate, you get it on. Thanks for tuning in, and thanks for sharing. Good day, Gina Grad.
Good day to you.
Handball, Brian. There it is.
Better late than ever.
Better late than ever. All right. Much to talk about. I sent a text to Dr. Drew a few moments ago. I'm going to have him call in about 15 minutes because I want to ask him about debates and COVID and spreading and all that and how it worked and how it works. And we'll get to some of that stuff in a second. First, just apropos of nothing, but it is why I feel the way I do about the first class head in a jetliner, which is I have a wedding to go to. It's in the Miami area. I have to catch a flight back on a Monday morning. And I told Matt to look up some prices for some flights for me. He looked up. I always check the first class price just to see. Yeah. But it's never for me. I guess there's a couple of ways to spend money. For me, it's never worth the first class flight because the flight is the same length. And if the flight goes down, everyone dies. The first class and business folks aren't spared.
True.
Although I wish
you get first.
I wish there was a God. Right. You go first. Every plane that hit the tower on 9/11, the first class cabin was the first to perish, technically. Now, the and now especially when they hand you a box with Triscuits in it tell you to knock yourself out, I don't even see why you're flying first class anymore. But I said, just for shits and giggles, give me the price. One way, Miami, L.A., first class. One way, Miami, L.A., first class, $2,245.
No.
One way.
Sweet Jesus. Okay.
One way. This flight is 3 months in the future, by the way. This is not, I'm not booking it for this weekend. $2,245. That's one way. It's a couple weird things. First off, one way is not half the price of two way, and it's not even, it's about the same price, which is a weird thing, number one. And then number two, again, for, what is first class in a COVID safety world? You just, you, instead of having one flight attendant for every 41 people telling you to put your mask on, you have one flight attendant for every 11 people telling you to put your mask on. So I see it. And again, I've flown first class. You get a box with Cheez-Its in it and no cocktails. I can't imagine. But I said, well, then give me the price one way, same airline, same flight. Miami,
4 miles back
to L.A. Yeah, 14 feet behind where someone would pay $2,245. What is the price on that? $149.
Yeah.
$149.
And as we established the last time you and Chris Loxamana flew together, there's not a huge difference between the upgraded, whatever it is, the premium economy or whatever.
Chris didn't want a first class seat.
That's what I'm saying, versus, you know, that's exponentially...
Oh,
overpriced.
God.
Could fly. There,
what is that? What are we missing? What's the algorithm?
More than it kind of reminded me way back in the day, they had like self-serve gas was $1.19. Full service was $4.85 a gallon. And I was like, oh, they don't want to be bothered. Like, right. It's almost like they're telling you, don't do this. Shoot, get away. don't do this. Because they're really just saying, I make plenty of money. There's no way I'm paying $2,250 for the same flight. Just no way. And again, we're living in a new world order where everyone's got to swing by Chick-fil-A, grab a bag of whatever before they get on the flight in the airport, and take your own little traveler bottles of vodka and freshen up your bubbly water and put your earbuds in and call it a day. Like, that's where we're at with flight now. But I know everyone thinks I'm a dick when I say part of the real estate you're staking out in that first class cabin is the goddamn head. That toilet is yours. Yep. You just paid $2,250. You have someone behind you who paid $149, and they, with gusto, they go full Kool-Aid. They burst right through that curtain. Walk right in. They'll shit up the head. It's a five-hour flight, you know? Someone's going in there, and they will use that bathroom, and they will not enforce that. This is your territory. And my thing is a very simple thing. And it applies to every facet of life. And yet everyone thinks I'm a colossal dick when I say these words. You may have access to that first class toilet as well. You simply have to pay another $2,000 for your ticket. Mm-hmm. That'll be your choice. I, by the way, would rather save the $2,000 and not use that bathroom. Yeah. But if, in fact, you do not want to pay the extra $2,000 for that ticket, you do not get to use that bathroom.
Well, and back in the day, not so long ago, a flight attendant would be only too happy to redirect you back to the coach bathroom and say, I'm sorry, this is for first class. But those days are long gone.
Right. Because that feels like judging. Like, it feels like we're judging poor people or something. Right. And it doesn't get enforced. But again, when you talk about that big a price difference, the toilet, at least sharing it with, you know, 13 of your closest friends up there, even that doesn't sound like first class. But when you open it up to the first half of the whole plane, you'll get up, go in there, realize someone's in there, go back and sit down, watch someone leave and walk right out of the first class, right into the back of the airplane. All right.
You know what? You know what messes up your beautiful bathroom situation is, obviously every plane's configured differently, but oftentimes if you're in row 11 and the drink cart's over at row 14 or 15 or 16 or 20
right.
between you and the bathroom, you have no choice. Got to go to the bathroom. And they'll make an exception,
right.
Which is feels like gaming the system a little bit.
Yeah. Now that, but the good news is there is no more drink cart anymore. That's true. That's just it. There is no more anything. I have no idea. I don't know how booze or cocktails factor into the safety of what we're doing, but either way, that is our new world order. All right. I was listening. I was watching the debate. I didn't watch the whole thing, but I watched bits and pieces of it. I figured out a few things. I think forcing the candidates to sit is a good thing.
Like energy level wise, like more conversational.
Yes.
As opposed to like a battle stance.
Yeah. It's kind of like they say schools that have school uniforms, there's less fighting. You know what I mean? There's something about wearing a uniform versus a T-shirt and shorts that tends to make you act a certain way. Mm-hmm. They also do the opposite. We all know in radio, a lot of DJs who stand up. Even when they don't have to stand up, they stand up. Heroes like Brian, who stand at their station.
All the greats, me, Tom Likas.
That's right.
He's not standing.
They stand. No, but there's a lot.
He did, though, for a long time.
We did, you know, we do live podcasts all the time. We just did one in Salt Lake City. Mark Garagos sat down on a stool, and I stood the whole time. And the reason I'm standing the whole time is because I want the energy to be up. You just have more energy when you're standing. And so you take the sitting and then you add the piece of plexi or the two pieces of plexi, which I'm now convinced is good no matter what. I would just put that COVID or not, you know. I think you sit Biden and Trump down, you put the plexi, you tell them they have to stay at their seat, and the leaning. First off, the gesticulating where you're sort of flapping your hand at the guy and wagging your finger at him and doing all that stuff. There's plexi now.
There's no room.
It's off, and you sit and you get the 12 feet, and it just brings it down. I think that's a good format. Well, it's a good format if folks can't control themselves, and I think that's what we're up against. I enjoyed the debate. Maybe it was just in a crazy contrast to the first debate, which was so annoying to me that I felt like, oh, I like this. I thought Pence won, but I thought Trump lost the first one. And I'm about, obviously, you'd rather have the president win if you're rooting for the president than the vice president. But I thought Pence was very measured, got a lot of info out, and did a good job. I thought the moderator did a good job.
Pence had a lot of compensating to do. I mean, he had to be the quietest, the most polite. He said it was, how many times did he say it was an honor to share the stage with Kamala Harris? I mean, he had to go so far the other direction just to get that decorum swing back.
Agreed. And was able to get out information because he wasn't shouting it over people while everyone were talking at the same time. Dr. Drew, sorry, just popped on. I wanted to ask him. So here's my question. Drew, are you up or do I punch you up? I was on line four. Drew?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, thanks. Okay. Thanks for joining us. Okay, so I have questions. And I know you have answers, and so I get confused, but then I can't tell because we're living in a weird time, so I don't know if these are normal questions or there's something I'm missing.
We had to examine just that. That is a profound statement, and I understand exactly what you mean.
So we just had a debate, and because of COVID-19, they sat 12 feet apart, and there were two sheets of plexiglass in between them for safety issues in case one of them... So that neither one of them could spread the virus from one to another, and with the moderator as well. But they did that thing in case someone was infected, or.
Well, it's a signal, right? We got a signal. We're doing everything right.
We're doing everything right. But so what I'm saying is then the next piece of news is the next presidential debate is going to be done via Zoom because we can't have them in the same room. But
which is bizarre because President Trump is no longer infectious and has had it. So he, if anybody brings it in the room, it would be Biden, but who cares?
But even if he was infectious, wouldn't them being 12 feet apart and having the plexi in between them, didn't we just do that?
It's really, again, something you and I talk about all the time. They're just following the science. No, they're not. Because the science right now would show that, okay, the 12 feet is plenty. The plexiglass, is, unless they're going to be throwing spitwads at each other, not really doing anything. Except unless they are aerosolizing, which now a certain percentage of people with COVID we now know send up aerosols that can go, you know, fair distance and hang around for a little bit more than we thought. So that plexiglass and distance may not do anything for the aerosol. The probability of that is low, but again, the plexiglass primarily is a signal. We're doing everything. We're following the science, except they're not.
But what I'm saying basically is if we've signed off that it is safe for these two individuals to debate the vice presidency at 12 foot with plexi, and that's a safe distance with a barrier, then why not do the exact same protocol for the president?
100% agree.
Is there something I'm missing, I guess, is what I'm asking.
No, you're not missing anything. I would say that is absolutely true, but I don't want to shit on your point, except I will say it's even more safe because one of the individuals has antibodies. He's already had it and will not be contagious.
Well, how does that work? And another stupid, naive question. They keep going, it's on the schedule for October 14th or 15th or whenever it is. And he's not, you know, depending on whether he got it on Wednesday or got it on Thursday.
Oh, I see. They want to pull 2 weeks.
Like a 2 week.
You know, you just
hold on. Drew, quiet down. One second.
Yeah.
Why not just kick the fucking thing back 3 days? I mean, can we just go, hey, all right, well, not October. We're going to do it on the 17th instead of the 14th. But can't we just do that?
Yes, but there might be something about who knows what, you know, in terms of strategies.
Gina's got a question.
Didn't they say they offered to kick it back to the 22nd and Trump said, no, I'm ready now?
Oh,
he doesn't want to look weak or sick or like he's bowing out.
Well, he turned down the video version of it, which is dumb.
And they were going to replace it with a Joe Biden town hall.
So I don't. But again, the science would suggest that it would be safe to do. So
it's
I don't
not
know.
Only safe to do, but safe to do without anything, because one person is immune and is not producing virus, and the other cannot infect the immune guy.
Right. So how does that work? You get it, and then what? So is Dwayne the Rock Johnson immune to this?
Here's where it gets a little weird, which is that because Trump got so many aggressive treatments, there are some people say, well, we don't really know if he would have mounted his own immune response yet, and maybe he could really still produce some virus late in the game because we suppress the virus with these exogenous antibodies, which I think is an interesting sort of thought experiment, but not likely to be true and easily to disprove by just checking his PCR every day.
Well, other than for symbolic reasons, can we figure out why they won't let them do it in person? It doesn't seem like there's a risk.
Why are they not being rational around the COVID? I'm confused now. People are not being rational, particularly government officials not being rational. Wow, this is a departure, except it's not.
Well, it just seems like, I don't know, Fauci could weigh in.
I
don't know.
See, that's why I think there must be something more going on than we know.
You think there is?
Yeah, there's got to be other things going on. I mean, this is all, I'm living in the upside down, completely. That's it. I'm in the upside down.
Well,
I'm in the world where Newsom says, where are you going to go?
Well, that clip drives me insane. I was actually listening to more of Newsom, where are you going to go? Which didn't, so Newsom, so here would be an interesting thing. I was thinking about this little symbolic experiment. In California, you know, Toyota leaves, Nissan leaves, and Tesla leaves, right? Huge companies, provide many jobs for many Californians, and they just pick up and leave.
Yeah.
And everyone just picks up and leaves.
Yeah.
And the governor, the governor's take on that is good riddance. Fine. But I now realize the latest dust up is with the largest employer, the largest private employer in California, which I heard, and I was surprised, but not really as I thought about it, Disney. Disney provides more jobs in California as a private company, and they won't let them reopen, and they're trying to figure out a way to reopen.
Yeah.
The
way, no other government on Earth prevents Disney or other amusement parks from opening safely. Only
isn't
California.
The one in China near Wuhan open?
Yes.
China has opened. They've all internationally, the governments have given them guidelines, and they have opened.
Right. So here's what I'm saying. People live in California. You tell them Tesla's left and Nissan's left and Toyota's left, and they go, yeah, all right. Big whoop. What have you told them Disneyland is leaving? We're out. I mean, what kind of message symbolically would that be to the folks of California and the people that run California? Disney says, we're out. We're picking up the Matterhorn. We're moving it to Austin. Like, or wherever. I mean, symbolically, don't you think that would really start a fire? Don't you think people would be outraged? Again,
it'd be shocking.
It'd be shocking, but it's symbolically more.
It'd
you know what I mean?
It'd be shocking to the public.
Right.
I'm not sure anything can get through our representative.
Well, what the fuck? I mean, it's like, why do we, again, I've said it a million times. You deal with any distributor around the country, and you go, I need this ventless gas-burning fireplace, or I need this laminated glass railing, and they go, oh, are you in California? And I go, yeah. Oh, no, we can't do it. We can do it everywhere. We can't do it there. I don't get what is so unique about California that we have to – we can't open when anywhere else would open.
We lead the world, Adam. We lead the world.
In oppression? Like, is that what we lead the world in? What is so progressive about tens of thousands of people out of work? What's noble
it's
about it?
It's very confusing. When I go up to Sacramento with families who beg for – slight changes in the law so they can help their loved ones on the street and bring them home. Scram. Get the F out of here. Scram.
It's
who do you think you are? You're sobbing
weird.
In front of the Senate. Sobbing. Please, I just need just slight changes in the law. We can do this. Get them off the street. Get them treated. They have a bed. Money. Nah, get out of here.
Yeah, it's such a bizarre way to run a state. So anyway, Disney wants to reopen and they can't reopen and they've given them no timeline either. Like it's kind of cruel. Like they were going to give them a timeline and then they went, nah, no timeline now. You're just closed.
I want an apology from Dr. Galley, who's the state's health director, who guaranteed a 95% increase in hospitalization in the next 3 weeks, during which time it actually went down 20-30%.
Yeah.
Or an apology.
Well,
he's the one setting the policies that they're. It's why Disneyland's not open. He needs to apologize.
Will we just reopen the school? By the way, I walked into my son's room today. He was doing his video classes. He was in bed, covers over his head, like laying down with the computer next to his head on the pillow. I'm like, can these fucking kids get up and go to fucking school? Is there any danger for the fucking kids at the fucking school? Or do we just have to wait? As Barbara Ferrer said, just after the election, that Disneyland will open after the election.
So we're done with the election.
Are they done with the election? So Disneyland can open then?
And just to weigh in, this very morning, not 2 hours ago, I saw the most depressing thing I've ever seen, which is a little kid doing PE in between the dining room table and the bar cart. It is the saddest image
you've
ever seen.
We don't know yet the full impact on the mental health and the trajectory of development on these kids. There's grave concerns about it. Grave concerns.
It sucks.
And again, no one's going to suffer more than the underprivileged, the underserved, and the people without the poor. They are going to get it worse than anyone.
Real quick, just because you said that.
What's that?
Oh, sorry. Go ahead. I was just going to say, just because you said that, it reminded me. I imagine you have thoughts on this new moving the goalpost farther back, that the LA County can't reopen until the ethnic numbers are less.
Brilliant. Yeah. How about we look at the fact that in LA County, African Americans have done disproportionately well. Why don't we explain that and congratulate the county for what they've done? They are 9% of the population and 7% of the cases. It's incredible. We're the only county in the country that has achieved this. Why aren't we applauding our work? They have a slightly higher fatality rate amongst those that get sick. And that's, again, that's for my medical system has to really attend to that. But the fact that so few have gotten sick as compared to other communities, that should be like, we should be... Rather than moving the goalposts, we should be applauding the work we've done here.
What Gina's discussing is something that Kalen can try to look up. It's about a week old. I think it was a Garcetti thing. It's sort of, the deal was, if you're in a community, I don't know, like Beverly Hills or maybe even, by the way, Orange County just went, hey, fuck it. Beach is open, restaurants open.
Ventura too. Riverside wants to do the same thing. I don't know why they did.
Every time I talk to Drew or Mike August, who spend their weekends in Orange County, I go, "Where are you going?" I go, "We're going to a restaurant." I'm going, "Are you sitting out in the parking lot?" "No, we're going into the restaurant." Like, you get to do that? Yeah, yeah. That's, they just get to do it. Somehow didn't affect them over there. But the ordinance was, until communities of color or low rent districts are doing well vis-a-vis the COVID, communities that are doing well, the COVID, like, I don't know, Beverly Hills, they don't get to open up until their less fortunate neighbors are doing well, which seems, again, a little unscientific to me. But after all, we're just following the science. I don't know. I think it was a Garcetti thing. Anyway, it's all vexing, but it seems strange in your professional medical opinion, Dr. Drew, that they would cancel the in-person presidential debate that's coming up on the, is it the 15th or the 14th?
Yes,
I can't
Thursday
remember.
Thursday the 15th.
It seems like we're missing something. Now, this is the new world order, which is, I feel like I'm missing something. Like, well, if one guy's got it, but he can't get it and he can't spread it, and the other guy is the only other guy on stage with him, then, and they put the plexi between them and they stand 12 foot apart, then what are we talking about here? And I always call Drew and ask him if I'm missing something, but he always tells me either no, or maybe he's missing something that they're not telling us.
Do you want to get another steak tonight?
You want to sit in the parking lot and get a steak tonight?
Yeah, let's do that.
Are you paying?
Yes.
Oh, good. I'm doubling down on the appetizer.
I'll get a reservation at like 6:30.
Oh, yeah. Do it, man.
Same place. Same table.
If you have trouble, drop my name. I know you're a Pasadena guy, but drop my name.
Oh, you got it.
All right. 6:30 tonight, Brosif.
All right. See you there.
Thanks, man.
All right. Bye.
All right. Okay.
At least we got one thing figured out.
Go to the parking lot and have a steak. All right. Let me hit the... Simply Safe here. That's right. Most home security companies trap you with high prices, tricky contracts, lousy customer support. There's only one no-brainer, Simply Safe. Everything to protect your home. An arsenal of sensors and cameras for every room, window, and door, tailored specifically for your home. Professional monitoring day and night, ready to send police, fire, medical professionals if necessary. Set it up in under an hour, peel and stick, up and running in under an hour. No technician required, no contract, pushy sales guys, hidden fees, or fine print. Starts at just $15 a month, everybody. U.S. News and World Report named it the best overall home security of 2020. It's Simply Safe, right, Dawson?
Head to simplysafe.com/Adam and get a free HD camera for our listeners. That's simplysafe.com/Adam to make sure they know our show sent you.
All right, I think we're going to do a Eat Your Feelings with our own Gina Grad. Let's do that, man.
Gina Grad's Eat Your Feelings, brought to you by Home Chef.
She could not stop eating the sugar and the grains. Then our friend Benny Hilton
lose the weight she gained. Now she's cooking healthy meals at night, and ever since then, her clothes aren't as tight. It's time for eat your feelings, do some healthy eating with Gina's recipe.
All right. So again, courtesy of Home Chef, I got another beautiful, simple meal to prepare because, again, they give you choices. Do you want to prepare something easy, intermediate, a little tougher? I went intermediate this time because these are two of my favorite ingredients to work with, salmon and Brussels sprouts. And I think we have a picture of my version as well. Three key things in a salmon and Brussels sprout meal. A, crispy is key. You want to make sure that sear on top of the salmon is nice and crispy and the Brussels sprouts in the oven. All you need is a little olive oil, salt, and pepper just to toss that in the oven. Nice and crispy. I personally don't like soggy, soft Brussels sprouts. So that crispness is really key. Two, and Home Chef opened my eyes to this, miso paste is a magical ingredient. I've used it for three different Home Chef meals and it makes everything, because I don't have another word for it, so umami-licious. Miso paste was mixed in with lemon zest, lime zest, a little bit of honey, and olive oil. And it's just this very decadent, like multi-layered flavor, a little tart, a little sweet, a little salty and umami. Delicious.
Where do you get the umami paste?
Everything comes with the kit. Everything.
Oh, it all comes there. But if somebody just wanted to go out and fetch some and start weaving it into other dishes, is it the spice? Is it refrigerated?
Personally, at my local,
forget it. No way.
Well, I was going to say the local whitey guy, hard to find. I need to hit my John's. Probably find miso paste maybe the Asian market, because Ralph's and Albertsons, I didn't really have any luck.
I think I've seen it at Trader Joe's, but it's for sure on Amazon.
Oh, okay. It is so worth it. Get yourself a big old jar of miso paste just to mix in. It is so perfect.
How hot is it?
Everything comes to life.
Is it as hot as miso can be?
Zero. Mild. Oh. Just that umami, mild, salty, delicious. Now this...
miso is hot. You're thinking of wasabi, right?
I'm thinking of wasabi.
Oh,
yeah, that's right.
Exactly.
It's not
that's
miso.
Like
it's miso, not wasabi.
Miso just...
closer to
just,
soy sauce.
Yeah,
okay.
Exactly. Just salty, umami goodness. This also comes with
a
sriracha.
Yes. Miso, sorry. Okay, here we go.
Well done.
This came with a sriracha sauce to make, to add a little heat to it, but I was making it with a five-year-old, so we skipped that. But very easy. Again, everything comes portion size, so you get your one lemon, you get your one lime, you get your little canister of miso paste, you get your two beautiful fillets of salmon, you get everything, but it is literally... everything gets a picture and a foolproof direction set. This took about 30 minutes from soup to nuts. And
you know,
again,
I want to say, do you guys remember, like, back in the day, what directions used to be like? Directions were like small print. You know, yep. It was written in Spanish on one side and Mandarin on the other.
Yes.
Never a picture.
Never a picture. And it was like, use fastener B, insert fastener B, and set screw handle provided. Allen wrench provided with set fastener. Take B and C fastener collar with zinc collar and set fastener. And it's like you just stare at it going, I don't know what's happening. I have no idea what is going on in front of me. This deal where you get this laminate and this color pictures and you're just looking at it. And somehow they figured it out. They could spread it out a little bit. It took us 77 years to figure out how to put directions down. It used to just be a huge pile of verbiage. You'd never figure out what was going on. You'd read it out loud three times. It wouldn't make sense. You'd hand it to your wife and go, you read it out loud. It doesn't make sense to me.
And that is why cookbooks used to be so GD intimidating, because cookbooks looked exactly the same.
Yes. It was like this thick and it was all text.
Exactly. And so intimidating, no one ever bothered. This is literally step by step. And another really important, we've talked about this before, two really important things. to get a good sear, you have to make sure the meat is dry. So you take the salmon out, or any chicken, any meat that you're searing that you want that nice crispness, and you have to pat it down with a paper towel and get as much moisture off as possible so it really crisps up beautifully. And I always thought this was a Bubba Mysis, as your people say, Adam, an old wives' tale. But I'm now on board. You have to let the meat rest. After it's done cooking, give it 5-10 minutes. I always just thought, what could that possibly help? You do.
I didn't know it, Brian. You know that?
Yeah, with like steak, you're supposed to tent it. You know, put like the foil over it, like a little tent, and it just continues to kind of cook.
It's up there. Hold on, Kaylin. Drew wanted to know if I wanted to do 5:15 or 8:15. What did Gary say? I tried to give him that.
Yeah, 8:15.
All right, good. You got my finger.
Yeah.
Nice. It sounds weird, but as I always say, when you do a hardwood flooring job in a house, you bring the hardwood in, you have to let it acclimate in the room for 2 or 3 days, and then you lay it down. Mm-hmm. Seems weird, but it's the same deal. You got to acclimate.
Let the yeast rise, which, you know, Jews are not fond of doing. Let the meat rest. It just seems pointless, but it's really not. So this was considered an intermediate meal, which literally was toss the Brussels sprouts, put them in the oven, sear up the salmon, and mix the sauce. So that's intermediate. So if anyone can do it. And thank you again to Home Chef for letting me try.
All right. Do we got an outro there, Dawson?
Brought to you by Home Chef.
And thanks to Home Chef. You can go to homechef.com/Adam and get in on all of that action. All right. Let's see. Follow up to our first question. On August 28th, California has implemented a new health equity requirements. Oh, boy. Health equity requirements. This is awesome. On the state's 35 largest counties. So we have to have health equity. So if we're heading down a weird path, because this notion of like, if one school is doing better than the other school, then we got to take shit from that school. Or if someone's making more money than the other person, or if someone has better health coverage than that guy, if this county has more COVID patients than that county does, woo! Good luck going down that road, everybody. Good luck making everything equal all the time. Good fucking luck.
I would imagine that when you do things like that, like when they say Congress shouldn't get to go on Christmas vacation until they figure such and such out. That's good because, you know, they don't just get to take vacation when we're all sitting around waiting for A, B, C, or D. But what exactly is everyone else supposed to do about this? How do you help in this case?
I always sort of describe it this way, which is a problem, which is you can't go to the outcome and fix it from the outcome. So you can't go outside of it. You have to fix it inside. So if you go, there are too many Asian students in the UC system, like UCLA has too many Asians and they don't have enough Hispanic students. There's, you know, the Asians represent 6% of the population, but 41% of the students.
110%.
Well, it feels like it. Yeah. On the other hand, the Hispanic community represents 47% of the community and only 11% of the students. So you go, okay, I'd like to fix that. So you go, how shall we fix that? Well, there's only one way to fix that. The only way to fix that is to somehow talk to the Hispanic community and get them more involved with education. You can work at the school level, you know, primary and secondary and all that. But what you can't do is just go to UCLA and go, hey, stop admitting these Asian students and start admitting the Hispanic students, regardless of the test scores, regardless of the achievement, just knock it off. We're going to go fix it that way. Fixing it that way doesn't fix anything. It exacerbates the problem. Now you have a bunch of people there. You have a bunch of pissed off Asians who could go to the school and should go to the school, but they can't because there's too many people that look like them that are there. And then you have a lot of Hispanic students who've been pushed into a system that they're probably not academically ready for, and they would do better at a lesser or less challenging, less vigorous academic environment. And it, you know, Cal State Northridge. They could probably cut it over there, but they might not be able to do it at Berkeley or Stanford. So going outside and fixing things never fucking works. It's like there's too many young black men being suspended in junior high. All right, we'll stop suspending young black men. Okay, I guess that works. It's like saying, there's termites destroying your house. Well, look the other way. don't inspect for termites then. It's like, okay.
It's no longer a house. It's a domicile.
That'll be fine for a while. And then, but get back to me in 10 years and tell me what you think. And so we do the thing in California where it's like everything's got to be equal. And if those guys are doing better than those guys and those guys have to wait for those guys to do better. My thing would be go find the communities that aren't doing as well and go figure out what the fuck's going on with those communities. And meanwhile, if you are doing well, then you shall reopen.
Because wouldn't that be the same scenario with the homeless population?
The homeless population, I've realized, is so much based on the title of homeless that we're so far down the wrong path on that, because you hear homeless and then we go, we got to get them a home, we got to figure out a way to get them housed,
as though that's the solution.
Yes, the solution. And then I don't know where the political energy comes from saying, you know, we need lower rents, many of these people, you know. And then you go, they go, some of them are there for schizophrenia and substance abuse, but really the answer is more low-cost housing. No, that is not the answer. It's all about interventions. It's all about substance. It's all about mental health. It's all that. And then, I mean, if you said to me, just walk up and down any homeless encampment anywhere in Los Angeles, talk to anyone who's living in a tent or a cardboard box underneath a freeway overpass and say to them, what's the deal? Why are you sleeping on the sidewalk underneath the freeway overpass? What percentage would go, I had a good job and I was working, and then they shut it down, and here I am. Less than 5%? I mean, what percentage of people are sleeping out on a street are just going, nah, it's not about substance. I don't need any pharmaceutical medication or anything for any, you know, deep-seated psychological anything. I had a job. I worked over at Val Surf over there on Riverside and Coldwater, and they shut it down. So here I am. I imagine if you walked all through every homeless encampment, the percentage of people that were sleeping on the sidewalk because they lost their job and couldn't afford rent, it seems like, I don't know if I know if I'd find that person.
I don't doubt there's a lot of hard luck stories, but to your point, there's no way they're not combined with some sort of substance abuse, some sort of mental illness.
It's hard to hold down a job when you have schizophrenia or a serious substance abuse issues. And yet we just keep talking about the home. So the home, like homeless, they need a home. That's another one of those finish line kind of fixes. Yeah. You know,
they're no longer homeless.
Yeah. Well, we got too many Asians and not enough Hispanics at Stanford. All right. Well, get rid of the Asians and put in the Hispanics. Okay. All right. Take the crazy guy. Put him in his own unit. Well, I don't know. You think that fix anything? They tried it with hotel rooms in San Francisco. They're like, all right, COVID shut everything down. We'll put them in hotel rooms. All right. Well, I think we all kind of know how that one's going to turn out, right?
Well, and at the risk of sounding super controversial, any functioning member of society, you tell them to just stop doing something. Just stop cold turkey. Just stop being like that and see how far you get. Now, which you won't get very far. Now, just tell a chain smoker who is winning in every other way, just stop smoking. Just stop it and see how easy that is. Now take someone with a mental illness and an addiction problem and say, here's the key to your room. Now stop being addicted or stop acting crazy. You know, that's you're setting them up to fail.
It's impossible. All right. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll do the news with Gina Grad right after this.
Give me the news with Grad. News with Gina Grad. Breaking crazy Trump tweets. Give me news with Gina Grad. Trouble in the Middle East. Celebrity drunk meltdowns. Deep news with Gina Grad.
The news with Gina Grad.
Well, this is still breaking, so much more information, I'm sure, is to come. But my God, if this doesn't sound like a movie plot, I don't know what does. The FBI has uncovered a plot by an armed militia in Michigan to kidnap Democratic Governor Gretchen Whitmer, according to Fox News. Michigan Attorney General Dana Nessel filed 19 state felony charges against seven people known to be members of the Wolverine Watchmen. The suspects are now under arrest. They're alleged to have called on the group's members to identify the home addresses of law enforcement officers in order to target them.
Trump tweeted out he likes them, but he doesn't know anything about them.
Right. Stand by.
He liked Red Dawn. So, you know, Wolverines.
Made threats of violence to instigate a civil war leading to a societal collapse, and engaged in the planning and training for an operation to attack the state capitol building and kidnap government officials, including Governor Whitmer. I also heard on the radio right before the show they were planning to bomb the bridge that goes to Whitmer's vacation home and, like, capture her and kidnap her there. I mean, this is a movie.
Is it... I don't know if this factored into their plot, but she's kind of hot, right?
She's a handsome woman.
Yeah, I don't know how old she is, but I think she's fairly easy on the eyes.
Yeah, didn't factor in.
Well, it could.
Let's see.
Oh, no. What are they going to do with her?
I'm just saying. Look, you get caught, you never see the light of day anyway. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. That's all I'm saying.
And for a penny and for a pound.
Oh, that's right. Is she... where are we with the name Gretchen? I think it's kind of a hot name. Do we like Gretchen? Is it old? Is it hot? Nobody names their kid Gretchen anymore, but I like the name Gretchen. I think I went to junior high with maybe a Gretchen or two.
Everybody went to junior high with a Gretchen, and they're gone now.
It's an in-between name. It's not really an old-timey name like Elizabeth or you know,
Lily
or something like that. It's not a new-timey name. It's a caught in-between name, so no one's interested. So people want new names and old names. We don't want middle names. I mean, middle of the road, middle era names. You know, so I think she's attractive. Again, I'm not saying I'm factoring it in, but.
The Dooch was married to a Gretchen.
Yeah, he was.
And she was pretty hot.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
You know what I remember about her? All I remember about her?
What?
Danny Bonaducci. My wife, size zero. Zero. Like, he'd always kept saying size zero. And I was like, I don't know why zero is attractive. I get you don't want a size 19, but I don't know. I'm not fucking Vera Wang, so I don't know that much about the woman's dress design, but size zero sounds, I don't know, maybe a little too wafy to me.
That is the greatest story I have ever heard.
Size zero, he would say that. That's all I remember about her. Size zero. Sorry, that was a Gretchen.
We'll keep you updated. I mean, it sounds too insane to be real, but they did foil the plot that was right around the corner. So we covered the debates pretty well, but we didn't cover this oddity out of China. China censors cut off Vice President Mike Pence mid-sentence during the debate when he called out the Chinese Communist Party for its mishandling of the coronavirus. And it literally just went to, the color screen,
I wonder if they use an Indian in China. We used to use an Indian here on the color, like the
test pattern.
The test pattern. We had an Indian head. Do you remember that, Brian?
Yeah, yeah.
I remember that.
Yeah, looked like a nickel, kind of, with the colors in the
background. Yeah, yeah. I wish... Yeah, who used Indian head? You know, we do need, you know what, there is no more. I'll tell you what there used to be. TV used to force you to go to bed at a certain time.
That's right.
Now, I can fucking sit in front of my 75-inch TV and watch any Super Bowl that ever happened, like soup to nuts, or watch, any episode of The Simpsons I want to watch. Back then, back in the day, you'd watch you know, during the week, especially, they, you know, TV would end. It was like, Letterman is done. It's 1:30 in the morning. You're going to fucking bed because we're done.
They play the national anthem.
Right.
And then the test pattern would come on.
The test pattern would come on, and then you'd be sitting there going, well, I guess it's time to go to bed. There's nothing else to do. I'm sure as fuck not going to read, so I'm going to bed. And yeah. And now there is no cutoff anymore. There's no more telling you.
Not even close.
There was that poem read by the pilot. They'd show the fighter jet going up into the sky, and they talk about touching the face of God, and they play this like really patriotic music. Yeah, Kaylin, see if you can find. We played it before. It was like it's the sign off, I guess, television sign off, fighter jet poem or something. And I remember sitting at like my buddy Ray, like his mom's apartment in North Hollywood, going, well, I guess it's time to walk home and go to bed. Like, it's bedtime. There's nothing else on.
So who flinched first? What network said, you know what? There's a whole ground that we're not covering from, you know, midnight to 5 a.m. And this is just, we're just wasted. And then everybody else freaked out and had to get on board.
Well, the thing was basically, it was loosely based on the booze schedule of a 7-Eleven or Circle K or even the Denny's in Hollywood, like any place that was open 24 hours, which is we stopped selling beer at 2 a.m., but we'll start again at 6 a.m.
Right. So, when the shows come back.
Right. So they would sign off at like 2 a.m. and then like the farm report would come on at like 5:30 or something. You know you're in bad shape if you ever pushed through to whatever the offerings were in the morning, because that's not something you wanted to watch if you stayed up all night and you were drunk.
Oh, here we go.
All right, let me hit NetSuite here, and then we'll play you that thing. It's an inspiring poem that people would find, if you played that today on TV, people would find it problematic, and there'd be a whole bunch of groups that were angry about it, and eventually the ACLU would have you take it down. First, I'll tell you about the NetSuite. If you're a business owner, you don't need us telling you how tough business can be, especially these days. But why make it harder than necessary? Don't let QuickBooks and spreadsheets slow you down. Stop paying for multiple systems that don't give you the info you need when you need it. Upgrade to NetSuite by Oracle, the world's number one cloud business system. Get visibility and control over financials, HR, inventory, e-commerce, and more, and you do it all in one place. Whether you're doing a million or hundreds of millions in revenue, save time, save money with NetSuite, right, Dawson?
Join the over 21,000 companies using NetSuite right now. Let NetSuite show you how they'll benefit your business with a free product tour at netsuite.com/Adam. Schedule your free product tour right now at netsuite.com/Adam. netsuite.com/Adam.
All right, the classic sign-off, High Flight, probably the mid-70s. This is what I'd see.
The surly bonds of earth and danced the skies on laughter's silvered wings. Sunward I've climbed and joined the tumbling mirth of sun-split clouds.
Sitting on Ray's mom's sofa in North Hollywood at 1:57 on a weeknight, going, gotta go back to the garage. Gotta go back to my cot mattress.
Wheeled and soared and swung high in the sunlit silence.
Maybe I'll rub one out.
There,
I think I'll rub one out.
Shouting wind along, and
I should do it at home, though. I don't want to do it in Ray's mom's apartment. That's weird.
I've never seen this.
Oh, yeah, they'd sign off with this thing. This is a slightly different version than the one I remember. Who's doing the narration? Lorne Greene? That name, or John Facenda or whatever from the NFL films? It's
Orson Welles.
Is it?
No.
Oh, I don't know.
Although he did sell out toward the end of his life. So. Probably.
Well, this is considered your patriotic duty.
That's true.
I topped the windswept heights with easy grace.
I swear to God, this guy does the NFL stuff.
It's got a little John Facenda in it.
Yeah.
And while smile with silent lifting mind.
I've yeah, could be him.
High untrespassed.
He's going to touch the face of God in a second.
Put out my hand and touched the face of God.
Like, all right, I'm walking home. I just remember that going up. This is so fucking depressing. I have nowhere to go. I have no money. I have nothing to do tomorrow. I'm just going to fucking go home, beat off, and sleep until 1 in the afternoon, and then I'll come back. We'll watch a Letterman tomorrow. That'll be it.
That was our line.
Who do you think did that VO? Sounded like John Facenda from NFL Films. All right, what else we got, Gina Grant?
Celebrities are getting naked to encourage you to vote. Not sure if you've seen this yet. Sarah Silverman, Chris Rock, Mark Ruffalo, Chelsea Handler, and others appear in a new PSA about naked ballots, which refers to mail-in ballots that aren't properly filled out or returned in the correct way, in the correct envelope. The video was produced by an organization called Represent Us and is intended to help mail-in voters make their vote count. It's about 2 minutes. Feel free to wrap it up anytime you want. Here's the beginning.
I'm naked.
I'm completely butt-ass naked.
I'm naked.
I'm, like, naked.
There isn't a man behind me. These are my hands.
Why you want me to be naked?
I know what you're thinking. You're thinking, Ruffalo, put your clothes on.
To be honest, I wish I could cover my hands with my boobs, but here we are.
I'm here to talk to you about voting.
Did you know that ballots could be naked?
And if you don't do exactly what I tell you, your ballot could get thrown out.
This is my ballot. Just got it.
First of all, when your ballot comes, you're supposed to read the instructions.
Read and all right, follow hold the on. Instructions that come.
It's called they,
your ballot.
They use what's called a mail sack. Maybe we get a little sack worked into this. Little scrotum worked into this action.
A little mail sack.
Yeah, you know, it'd be a funny goof is to like not really have a campaign, but go to celebrities and see what you could get them to do. Now, you'd have to pick something like, you know, voting or pediatric AIDS or something, you know, something that kind of inspired them.
Sure.
And then see, like, it's back sack for pediatric AIDS. We film just the back of your scrotum, you know, tastefully, and then we lay your voice over. Let's lay your voice over. I'm just wondering, like, I think it's always based on who did it first. So, if you go to like Chris Rock and you go, hey, take your shirt off, man. We want to film you doing this thing. He'd go, huh? And then you'd go, oh, no, we got Sarah Silverman and Chelsea Handler. Schumer. And then we got Schumer. And then you go, oh, okay. So you'd have to tell the celebrity, the other celebrities that, of course, you didn't contact were in for back the sack.
I have an alternate pitch for, you know, how like racially biased standardized testing has been kind of a hot subject.
Mm-hmm.
Testies for testing.
We got Ruffalo on board. We got Clooney. Mm-hmm. We got all the big names. And then we just tell them you can film it yourself. Again, tasteful, back sack, whatever that means to you. And then we'll just lay your voice in over it. The poem sign-off voice actor is whom?
William Conrad.
William Conrad.
Oh.
That's canon. Do you know who William Conrad is?
Mm-mm.
Who? William Conrad.
No, I don't know what canon is.
Canon was a 70s cop show, detective show, all those 70s, you know, the, just a one-name stuff. And he was also in Jake and the Fat Man or whatever.
Which one was he?
I'm looking at the pictures. I can guess.
It also says he was a fighter pilot. So maybe that's why he did it.
Was he?
Says a World War II fighter pilot, actor, producer, director, detective series, Canon.
Find the opening to Canon. I mean, Canon drove around a large LTD. And it was funny. I can't remember if it was a Leno joke, but in those series, like Barney, oh God, Buddy Epson played Barnaby Jones. Had Barnaby Jones and there was Cannon. So Buddy Epson played an old detective and Cannon played a fat detective, right? And Leno had this joke is like the first guy who would, the first goon to get his ass kicked would be the first guy to call to call Barnaby Jones old or to call Cannon fat. Like the first street thug that called him fat, they'd always the first one to get their ass kicked. Like the first one to die on Star Trek would always be the new crew member. Mm-hmm. I don't recognize that guy. Then later, you know, the monster lands on his head and chews it off. But yeah, that was William Conrad. That All right. big actor, big 50s, 70s actor, probably died in the early 80s or late
94.
80s. Oh, yeah, decent
Hung
run.
Out for a while.
How old was he?
Let's say 74. I think he was born in 1920.
He had he had that big voice. And the beginning of Cannon. So you guys don't remember all this. You guys missed the whole era of bad detective single name shows.
My Ironside.
Yeah, all that stuff. And, you know, again, we had to watch TV until it was time for the F-14 Tomcat to touch the face of God and we had to go home. But whatever was on, you had to watch it. You couldn't just go, fuck Cannon. It was like, Cannon's what's on? You must watch Cannon. So you just watch Cannon. We'll see if we can watch it. Yeah, fat guy. Imagine any 13-year-old watching Cannon. Starring William Conrad. Fat guy looking at stuff. If you're fat and you got a mustache, Cannon is your show. Montage, driving Cannon, walking Cannon, kicking ass Cannon. Ironically, never eating Cannon. You know, for some reason, I'm sure the ladies loved him too. It's just a lot of him walking through lobbies of hotels with purpose.
Yeah, I was gonna say, this intro is enticing me to keep watching. It's like, oh, this guy walks.
You didn't need to be enticed. What were your choices? Where are you going?
Where else are you going?
You go binge watch Stranger Things on Netflix, douche. You got nowhere to go, bitch. You watch us. That it's a cop. It's a detective. It's an action detective show. But the entire montage is him walking in a blazer, looking concerned. Come on, really? No car chase, no nothing.
From a really unfortunate camera angle, it's all jowl.
It's all jowl. Yeah, the guy got down. He did not have a selfie stick. They put they had a belt buckle camera, and it was just him and his big jowls walking through like a casino, and they just film him. Ugh, that is not enticing. What year was Cannon? What, like 1974 to 1977 or something like that?
71 to 76.
Yeah.
Oh, good
decent
run.
Decent run. Yeah, I was a kid, but it was like, we gotta watch Cannon. What are you gonna do? You gonna read? You gonna stare at a ceiling fan? What are your options?
I'd like to see a try.
What are your options? Go ahead. Watch Cannon. All right, so
I'm afraid to ask, but did Cannon have like a hook? Like he's a detective, but you know what I mean?
He has adult onset diabetes.
Lost a foot.
You can read the description of Cannon. Cannon, I don't remember, so Telly Savalas he had a couple of like hooks. He had a bomb pop. He'd always have a Tootsie Roll pop in his mouth. Mm-hmm. And then at some point he'd pull it out and he'd go, who loves you, baby? And I don't know. We were living in such a vacuum of entertainment that you'd watch the entire episode of what was Telly Savalas' show?
Kojak.
Now they're single name thing, right? You watch the whole thing, and at the very end, when they're cuffing the guy and like putting him into the back of the squad car, he'd turn and go, "Who loves you, baby?" And you'd go, "Yeah,
woo! He said it.
He did it. He did it.
He does the thing he does every episode.
He does that thing.
That.
He does the 'Who loves you, baby?' And he had a sucker in his mouth. Woo! This is prime entertainment. I've never been more entertained in my life." Yeah, it was just stupid. You'd have a stupid little hook. You'd have a hat you wore. You'd have a sucker you wore. Like some dumb nothingness.
What about Columbo?
Columbo was, he wore a rain jacket everywhere, so that was a big deal. He's like, he was always wearing that London fog rain jacket. He was always, he drove around an old pile of shit car, which was sort of his hook. And then at the end, when he was leaving, he'd always stop and turn around and say, wait 1 minute. That's how you knew the dude was busted. So his thing,
he said like, just one more question.
Right, right. So he was,
some version of that.
He'd go, he'd always say to the rich guy, you know, he'd be staying. He dealt with super rich guys. And he's like, I'm telling you, Lieutenant Columbo, my wife drowned in a bathtub and there's nothing more to it. And he'd go, yeah, it checks out. I guess it was someone else. And he'd go walking out and he'd stop by the front door and he'd turn around and he'd go, one more minute. Your wife, she wore red nail polish because, and then the music would like kick in and that the guy knew he was busted at that point. So that was the big deal.
I've never heard of McLeod.
McLeod was Dennis Weaver.
Dennis Weaver.
It says a New Mexico deputy marshal gets assigned to Manhattan's 27th precinct.
He rode a horse down, you know, Fifth Avenue.
Okay.
Because that's how they would do it back then. You know
that's
what I mean?
Fresh out of water, yeah.
The guy literally pulling into the subway on a horse. You know, because, hey, that's who he is. He's McLeod.
That's how he gets around. He doesn't know any other way.
He's a fish out of water. Yeah.
Never heard of McMillan and wife?
McMillan and wife was Rock Hudson.
Oh, no.
Really?
Was he the wife?
How dare you? McMillan and wife, was that? I think that was Rock Hudson. Yeah, that was another team that solved crime.
Wow, never
another,
heard of
like,
it.
Sunday night, whatever.
Rock Hudson and Susan St. James.
Yeah, McMillan and Beard. I mean, all right. Let me hit Bet Online here. Bet Online. Yeah, football back full swing. NBA finals. Well, you better get on the NBA finals because it could all end tonight as you hear this. If you might not be able to go to the game, but you still get in on the action at Bet Online. Sunday games coming up: Raiders at Chiefs, Eagles at Steelers, Cowboys at Giants, McMillan at Wife's, Broncos at Patriots, Vikings at Seahawks, Dolphins at 49ers. More options to wager than anywhere else online. And you can do totals, you can do props, you can bet the second half. Mike August does that all the time. Head to BetOnline today. Take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. Visit betonline.ag, our exclusive partner, Podcast One. Don't forget promo code Podcast One for your sign-up bonus today. BetOnline, your online sports book experts. Yeah.
How insulting is it? Usually when you read for the part of wife, it's like an under five. Like you're just there to like say one or two lines. I'm reading for the part of wife, the title character.
McMillan and wife. Well, still less insulting than Jake and the Fat Man, right?
Yeah, that's aggressive.
Dawson, I don't know why I'm looking at you, but didn't we do a reenactment where...
I believe... Yes, there was a reenactment where
William Conrad's agent called and said, hey, we've got this show called Jake and the Fat Man. And Robert Conrad was like, okay, who's playing the Fat Man?
Rob Riggle played the Fat Man in the reenactment. And he said, so, yeah, you want me to play the role of Jake?
Right.
And that was the whole thing, and it was hilarious.
Right. I'll try to find that for another show. I don't know why. That just made me laugh. All right, Gina, let's bring it home. We have our World War II veteran on hold. We don't want to keep him waiting.
You got it. Of course. I'm Gina Grad, and that's the news.
Gina Grad!
That was the news with Gina Grad.
All right, just a quick 30 seconds for our good friends over at Geico. How do you banish high rates on car insurance? Switch to Geico during the Geico-ween. See, Halloween's coming up. Folks at Geico have been working even harder to cast out high rates and craft just the right policy for your family. Switching to Geico, it isn't scary, especially when they could brew up spellbinding savings just for you. So get a quote and do it today. Geico.com. That is Geico.com. All right, quick break, and we'll come back with Frank Sisson. He's a World War II veteran, believe it or not. He's got a book out, was at the Battle of the Bulge and was with General Patton, and we'll talk to him about that world right after this.
Hey, movie lovers, who needs a theater when you have Pluto TV? Grab your popcorn and your streaming device because free movies are here. Pluto TV is your home for movies. Great movies are playing anytime in over 20 exclusive movie channels of action, horror, rom-coms, and more. Watch hits like Saving Private Ryan, Pretty in Pink, and Charlie's Angels all for free. No signups, no fees, no contracts. Ever. Download the free Pluto TV app on any device.